इदं भगवान् गोष्ठा नसाया सारवायुभिः चेष्टितं विहते यज्ञे मानिना तीव्रमान्युना. My dear Lord, when my sacrifice was disrupted, I became fiercely angry because of false pride. Thus I tried to destroy your cowherd community with severe rain and wind. Vayesanu grihitasmi vastastambho vyadhodhyama ishvaram gurumatmanam tvam aham saranam gataha. O Lord, you have shown mercy to me by shattering my pride and defeating my attempt to punish Vrindavan. To you, the Supreme Lord, Spiritual Master, and Supreme Soul, I have now come for shelter. Sri Shuka Uvacha Evam Sankirtita Krishna Maghona Bhagavan Amum Mega Gambiraya Vacha Prahasan Idam Abravit. Shukadev Goswami said, thus glorified by Indra, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, smiled and then spoke to him as follows, in a voice resonant like the clouds. Purport. Although in this pastime Lord Krishna appeared to be a small boy, the words Mega Gambiraya Vacha indicate that he spoke to Indra with the deep resonant voice of the Supreme Lord. Sri Bhagavanu Vacha Mayate Kari Magavan Makka Bhango Nugrinatha Mad Anusmnataye Nityam Matasyendra Sriya Brisham. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Indra, it was out of mercy that I stop the sacrifice meant for you. You were greatly intoxicated by your opulences as the King of Heaven, and I wanted you to always remember me. Purport. According to Sridhar Swami, Indra and Lord Krishna here exchange a heart-to-heart talk. Indra revealed his mind to the Lord, and now Lord Krishna similarly reveals his own intention. In text 11 of this chapter, Indra emphatically declared that Lord Krishna is in fact everything. And thus, according to Indra's own criteria, forgetting Lord Krishna is clearly a state of insanity. When the Supreme Lord reminds us of his supreme existence, he is not proudly advertising himself like a mundane politician or entertainer. The Lord is self-satisfied in his own infinite existence and is trying lovingly to bring us back to our own perfect existence as his eternal associates. From God's point of view, even the mighty king of heaven, Indra, is a mere child, and a naughty child at that. And thus the Lord, being a caring father, punished his child and brought him back to the sanity of Krishna consciousness. Someone can translate for her?
Om Agyantimirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jenatasmoy Sri Guruve Namah.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Indra, it was out of mercy that I stopped the sacrifice meant for you. You were greatly intoxicated by your opulence as King of Heaven, and I wanted you to always remember me. Here we find Indra, the most powerful of the demigods and the King of Heaven, decorated with the royal opulence of crown, heavenly jewelry, beautiful, beautiful garments, so lavish and rich, there is nothing of this sort on this earth planet. And also Indra, he is like a kshatriya in the sense he is such an incredibly powerful warrior. No one has ever been able to kill him in battle. And even if someone can temporarily overcome him, they become famous throughout the entire universe. Just like Ravana's son, he was named Indrajit because one time he happened to overcome him with battle. He became so famous for this. So we can imagine what an awesome, breathtaking sight it must be to see the power and opulence of the King of Heaven, Indra. And here, he's laying in the dust of Brajbhumi, in utter humility, falling at the feet of Gopal, who appears like a simple cowherd boy, only 7-year-old child, simply decorated with a few flowers, wild flowers from Vrindavan, with his bare feet, with a peacock feather adorning his beautiful blackish curly hairs. And Indra, who is worshipped by all those karmakandis who want to attain heavenly benedictions. He is here revealing to everyone that Krishna is the Supreme Absolute Truth. Tumi Sarveshwareshwara. That he is the controller of all controllers. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has prayed like this. Tumi Sarveshwareshwara Brajendra Kumara. That this Brajendra Kumar, he is the controller of all controllers. Everyone, to some extent, is an Ishwara or a controller. Even the little insect, the ant, has some control over some tiny little domain in this world. What to speak of human beings? Some very wealthy people, they are Ishwaras of big, big factories. Some big politicians, they are Ishwaras of entire states or entire nations. But even the simple beggars of the street, they may have one little torn up cloth, and they may have one little place in the street that they follow, that they go to rest at night. And they consider, I am the Ishwara. I am the lord of this little piece of cement, and I am the lord of this torn cloth. So everyone, every living being, even the tree, is under the illusion that it is the Ishwara of that little piece of land that it is covering. And it is the provider of all the fruits. But Krishna is Sarveshwareshwara. That means of all controllers, from the Indragopa, the smallest insect, up to Indra and Brahma, Krishna is the controller of all controllers. Vrajendra Nandana Kumar, although he is standing like a beautiful little cowherd boy who is begging Mother Yashoda, please give me the milk from your breast, otherwise I will starve. And here, although Lord Sri Krishna never admits to be God to the Brijavasis, he simply appears to be their beloved friend, child, or lover. But here to Indra, in this verse we are reading today, he is very honestly speaking that I am the Supreme Absolute Truth. I am the personality of Godhead. I am the cause of all causes. You think you're the king of heaven? To me, you are just a naughty little child. And because you became angry with me due to false pride, anyone who forgets me is insane, Krishna is telling him. And because of that insanity, I am now bringing back to remembrance the truth of who I am. Now, the great acharyas, they give us a beautiful explanation. Krishna, to an ordinary man, would appear to be very proud and boastful. If we brag about something we are or something we have done, whether we've done it or not, if we admit that we've done it and tell others, it's considered false pride. In the material world, even if somebody else does all the work, we want to take the credit. That's our nature, our cheating propensity. But the fact is, even if we do all the work, if we want to take the credit and boast what we have done, then it is simply false pride. It is simply an illusion. The great saintly people, they will think, whatever you've done has been nullified by your taking the credit for it. But here we find Krishna. He's telling Indra how great he is. And sometimes people say, why God talks about how great he is? And why God wants us to glorify him? After all, Lord Chaitanya said, Amani na manadena kirtaniya sadahari. You should expect no respect for oneself, and you should give all respect to others. This is what Mahaprabhu has said.
And it is also said, yad yad acharati sthresthas tad tad evetarojana sayat pramanam kurute lokas tad anuvaratate, that what great men do, common men will follow. And Krishna is telling us, do not expect anyone to glorify you. Expect nothing for yourself, but offer all respect to others. And Krishna is saying that you give all respect to me and don't expect anything for yourself. Huh? You glorify me, never glorify you. It's just the opposite, is it not? Krishna is telling us, offer all respect to others, expect none in return. And here Krishna is telling Indra, as far as I'm concerned, I'll offer no respect to you, but you offer all respect to me. So therefore, sometimes people actually become very angry with God, that he's a hypocrite. Why he wants everyone to glorify him? Why he wants the whole world to be chanting his name? Politicians also want the whole world to chant their names. And mundane entertainers, they also want the whole world to chant their names. These big movie stars, they like to see their pictures on big billboards. And they like to see people going by like this, Adibo, Namaskar. And big politicians. Did you ever see the way what do you call it? The campaigns for elections. They just put their pictures everywhere. Right? You just see hundreds and thousands of pictures of some politician standing like this. And everybody in the whole country is seeing this politician's form, his rupa, his murti, right? Everyone's seeing the pictures, and his name is everywhere, right? His rup and his nam is just being broadcasted everywhere by the hundreds and the thousands. Generally, they never talk about what they believe in or what they're going to do for you. They just, the name, vote, who runs, I don't know. Vote for Krishna Patel or something like that. And it just, everyone, yes, his name is everywhere, his form is everywhere. In this way, they want the whole world to glorify their name and their form. So, and Krishna, he's telling us the same thing, that you should all glorify my name and form. The politicians, why do they make their picture and their name everywhere? Because they want you to remember them. Krishna's saying the same thing. Always chant my name. Always meditate on my beautiful form. Always remember me. But there is a difference. What is the difference? The difference is the politician is doing it to exploit you. He's doing it for his own sense gratification. He's saying he will serve you, but really what will he do for you? But Krishna is declaring himself to be the supreme, to be the most merciful, and he is ordering everyone to chant his name and remember him, because he knows that by doing so we will be liberated from the clutches of birth and death, and we will be submerged in the ocean, the nectarine ocean of ecstatic love. Therefore, Krishna is not doing it out of false pride. He is doing it out of love, like a father for his child. Krishna knows that he is the cause of all causes. He is the source of everything. He is the reservoir of all pleasure. And he wants to share that infinite pleasure with us. And to the degree we remember him,
And to the degree we glorify him, to that degree, we open our hearts and our minds to receive this infinite ocean, this incessant river of divine pleasure and love. So it is out of compassion, it is out of mercy that Krishna orders us to always chant his name and remember his beautiful form. And Indra, he is accepting this fact. Indra is frankly admitting that I wanted people to glorify me. I wanted people to be impressed by my riches and my greatness and my powers and my influence. But actually, my dear Lord, it all belongs to you. All glorification is meant for you. Therefore, I am an illusion. And this is Krishna consciousness. Whether we have a lot or whether we have a little, to recognize that it is all the property of Krishna, that it is all meant for the glorification of Krishna, that it is all meant for the loving service in the pleasure of Krishna. For Krishna, the lifting of Govardhan Hill was such an insignificant thing to do. Indra, with all his might, he sent the extent of all his potencies to destroy Vrindavan. The Samvartaka clouds is the most powerful weapon of Indra's. His mighty Vajra or thunderbolt may be able to crack mountains and kill demons, but these clouds destroy entire planets within moments. The most powerful resource that he has, he sent down in full strength, led by him on his Airavata elephant to destroy the Vrijavasis. And Krishna, he wanted to add insult to injury to the ego of Indra. He could have done so many things in order. He could have performed such, he could have declared war against Indra and fought against him and made Indra like a great, powerful Kshatriya who was defeated. Huh? He could have done so many things to counteract Indra. But what did he do? With the little finger of his left hand, the weakest part of the human body, he lifted the Govardhan Hill and smilingly held it for 7 days, and all the Vrijavasis, they did not even get touched by one drop of rain. With all his Samvartaka clouds, which were pouring, not raindrops, but it was like river falling from the sky. It is described that the rain was falling like huge pillars at fierce speeds. And yet not a single drop touched the inhabitants of Brajabhumi. And Krishna just stood there, completely making a fool out of Indra, insulting him terribly. And Indra, it is explained here by Krishna, after Indra surrendered to him, the Lord is saying that it was out of my mercy. I stopped the sacrifice meant for you just to cure you from the disease of false pride. You were greatly intoxicated by your opulence as King of Heaven, and I wanted you to always remember me. This is very important.
We can only remember Krishna properly when we are in a humble state of mind. Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnana amani namana dena kirtaniya sadari.
To the degree we have adopted the true principles that Mahaprabhu has taught of real humility, to that degree we can actually remember Krishna. If we remember Krishna in a condition of false pride, proud of our own powers or opulences like Indra, even if we remember Krishna, we're not really remembering him at all. It is a contaminated state of remembrance. It is adulterated. True remembrance of the Lord must be in a humble state of mind. And therefore Krishna is telling Indra that to curb your pride, not only to curb it, but to smash it, to destroy it, you're greatly intoxicated by your opulence. Therefore, I have done all this just because I love you and I want you to remember me. Because in remembering me, you never have to suffer birth and death. Queen Kunti also prayed, Krishna, let calamities come upon me. Let pains and miseries and sufferings come upon me. Because when they do, I am helpless on my own, and therefore I must remember you. And in remembering you, I never has to see the face of death again. So we should know that in the life of a devotee, we have so many anarthas. We have so many unwanted qualities stored up in our heart. The worst of all is false pride. But we also have lust. And sometimes we're envious. And sometimes we become angry. And sometimes we're greedy, we just never have enough. And we should know that oftentimes Krishna frustrates our plans. Sometimes he sends people to not recognize, to insult us. Sometimes he sends physical disease or failures. Through so many agencies, Krishna is working to help us to always remember him. And in the mood of Queen Kunti, we should understand what's behind everything that takes place in the life of a devotee. When we surrender to Krishna, even when we begin to attempt to surrender to Krishna by accepting his spiritual master and accepting his service at the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas, then from that time Krishna takes special concern like a father to help us remember him. And whether there's happiness or distress, pleasure or pain, success or failure, honor or dishonor, we should know that behind these external appearances, Krishna's like a puppeteer. He's like the stage director. And he's arranging everything to help us remember him. He wants to bring us down to our knees, where we can say, Krishna, I'm yours. You are everything. I am your servant. Is there any questions? Yes.
I always used to feel it that once taking the case of example of Indra, if you have all this material advantages like good health or a good education or a good property or something beauty, all these things if you have it in the beginning of your life itself, and after that you are not Krishna conscious, or if you are not serious in spiritual life, and before that all these qualities are there with you, Then if you come into spiritual life, it becomes lots and lots of problems for us to have that humble state of attitude. Or this pride is so much strong in our heart because that thing is so fixed up in our mind that this is us and we are the controller. And as Queen Kunti has said, that all these things is a bottleneck. But if you have all these qualities before coming into spiritual life, it's such a big problem for us to have a humble state of attitude. So in fact, and if you are Krishna conscious in the beginning itself in a serious note, and after that all these qualities comes in our life, is education or a property or this or that, you will not have that type of a problem because you are completely with the association of devotees, you are having this very nice association, so you are in a humble state of mind. So is it not so that if you have all these things in your life before coming into Krishna consciousness, it's a curse from Krishna rather than it's a, because you are finding it so difficult to come into humble state of mind. And it becomes such a problem some to come into level that pride doesn't, because it's such a problem that pride doesn't go from our heart. It's constantly hampering us that, no, I have done it. And then to come out of it, it's a problem for us. So how to see that we don't feel it's a curse from Krishna that...
It is a curse and it is a blessing, depending on our willingness to submit to the guidance and direction of advanced devotees. If we are willing to humble ourselves, to inquire submissive and render service to advanced Vaishnavas, it is a blessing because we have so much to be utilized for so many wonderful purposes in God's service. But if we think that we are such great Ishwaras, such great Indras, that I don't have to accept instruction from anyone, I know better, even the sadhus are depending on me, huh? If we have that consciousness, then it is a curse. Tadvedi pranipatina pariprasnena sevya. Maharaj Pratapa Rudra, he was king, but it was not a curse for him because he utilized everything in the service of Lord Chaitanya without even giving up his throne, because he was inquiring submissively. He was always asking Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, how can we serve the Lord? What should we do for him? Sarvabhauma was saying, even Lord Chaitanya, he would talk to Kashishwar Mishra. He would say, Haridas Thakur, I need a place for him to stay. Shivananda Sen has come, I need a place to stay. Where did they get all the places from? They would all approach Pratapa Rudra Maharaj. He would say, yes, put him here, put him here. Even Lord Chaitanya himself, Pratapa Rudra Maharaj said, Lord Chaitanya is coming. There's a nice place, I think it will be just right for him, in the house of Kashi Mishra. It's called Gambira. Let him stay there. His mind, his attention was constantly in, although he was ruling the state expertly, he was constantly inquiring submissively from Sarvabhauma how to utilize everything for the pleasure of the Lord, in the service of the Lord. And he was willing to give up everything if he couldn't use it in God's service. Huh? If we simply learn how to inquire submissively and render service to the advanced Vaishnavas, then all of the opulence that Krishna has given us, either in the present or in the past, it is all a blessing. But if we use it according to our own icon, our own egoistic ideas, then it is a fact that spiritually it is a curse.
Maharaj, what about this false pride, which is because the chances of false pride is much more prominent if you have these things in your mind before
coming. Same thing. If you just accept a humble position to follow instructions from great personalities, then your false pride is in a completely subdued condition, and it is in the process of being purified. But if we do not inquire submissively, and we do not utilize what God has given us in His service, then that false pride, rather than becoming purified, it becomes inflamed, becomes aggravated by our own pursuits in this world. And that can happen even to a devotee, unless we are very, very careful. What to speak of someone who has opulences before he came to Krishna consciousness? Even if a person is a beggar before he comes to Krishna consciousness, and then later on he becomes a great preacher or a sannyasi, and he starts thinking in terms of, now I am the controller, now I am the master, now I am independent of my Gurudev's instructions, that person is in the same predicament. At every stage of our life, we have to be very careful to be a proper servant, to be getting good direction and following that good direction, not acting independently according to our own egoistic views. Whatever we do should be with the blessings of great souls. And we shouldn't demand blessings. We should humbly appeal for blessings. We simply follow that formula. Whoever we are, we can always remember Krishna.
In the story of King Ambarish, we find that Lord Vishnu told Durvasa Muni, you must go and beg forgiveness from Ambarish Maharaj. But here you find Indra offending all the Brajvasis together, not even one, all his devotees simultaneously. But still he did forgive him without going to the Brajvasis.
Because he fell at the feet of the Surabhi cow. And he begged the Surabhi cow to kindly, on his behalf, beg forgiveness from Krishna. And because it was Surabhi who said to Krishna, please forgive Indra, that he was forgiven. Because he did get the blessings and the grace of the mother of all the cows of Brajbhumi. So he approached the devotee first. Yes.
That seems to be like being a very intelligent person, this Indra, because he knew that Krishna will always forgive if Surabhi cow goes there. So he used the media of Surabhi cow, whereas Durvasa Muni seems to have been a little more crude and did not go through a devotee. Is that the difference?
The first thing is Indra approached his spiritual master, Brahma. First he approached his guru, and he realized he made a great mistake. He didn't know what to do. He was genuinely, from the core of his heart, repentant. He wasn't just making a show. If he was just making a show, Krishna would not have been so merciful to him. Krishna knows our heart. He was genuinely, from the core of his heart, because actually Indra's a great devotee. He just became caught up in all of his worldly management policies. So he was really, when he sobered up upon seeing what he had done, he was offending great Vaishnavas and offending God himself. He approached his guru, Brahma, and said, what am I supposed to do? I can't approach Krishna. Krishna's, I'm embarrassed to come before Krishna. And why should he forgive me now? Look, I've tried to kill him. I've tried to murder him. Huh? And all of his friends and family members. So he inquired, actually submissively, from his guru. And his guru Maharaj told him, don't even try to approach Krishna directly now. You've committed too much of an offense. You go to Sarabi. Because of everybody, the cows are most dear to Krishna. Go Brahmanya, namo Brahmanya devaya, go Brahmanya hitayacha. Krishna is most pleased with cows and Brahmins. And Prabhupada said, of the two, he's most pleased with cows. They are very dear to him. So you go to the Sarabi cow. And you beg her forgiveness. And you get her blessings. And you ask Sarabi on your behalf to approach Krishna. And if she appeals on your behalf, then Krishna will accept you. In the same way, when Jagai and Madai committed that great offense, they didn't only offend Lord Nityananda, they offended everybody, including Vaishnavas, everybody. And when they begged Lord Chaitanya, when Madhai begged Mahaprabhu, please save me, Mahaprabhu didn't want to listen to any of his apologies. He was ready to kill him. But when Nityananda intervened and came between them and asked, please forgive him, Lord Chaitanya had to forgive him. How could he refuse Nityananda's request? So in the same way, Indra, the wrath of Krishna was upon him. But when he approached through Sarabi, who's so dear to Krishna, and she said, Krishna, please forgive Indra. He's actually a nice devotee. She was embarrassed herself. Here's the king of heaven. The person who lives in the greatest royalty, approaching a simple cow for shelter, for refuge. And she had to approach Krishna and said, actually, Indra's a nice devotee. Please forgive him. Krishna said, all right. Because he has come to you, therefore I must forgive. Durvasa Muni, because he didn't consult his spiritual master to find out how to approach Krishna properly, he spent a whole year wandering around trying to get refuge. Huh? He was asking Brahma and Shiva and everybody else to save him from the Sudarshan Chakra. He didn't ask them to appeal on his behalf for his offenses. Huh? He was asking for protection from his offenses, but he didn't repent his offense until Krishna told him that you must repent your offense. See, Sarabi represented all the residents of Vrindavan. So Indra, because he, with all of his big power and greatness, because he inquired from his guru, he understood how to get the mercy of Krishna. And he followed. But Durvasa Muni was trying to use his own intelligence.
Yes. So, Maharaj, we can, from this example, we can have one conviction in our mind that we should not think about Krishna, that what is thinking of us, what he is having thought for us, that what type of a quality we are having. We should forget about everything. We should have only one conviction in our mind that we should just please our spiritual master and he will do the needful for us in the future.
Yes. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasaro yasya prasada nagati kuta. We shouldn't forget Krishna, because the Guru Maharaj, all he's telling us is to remember Krishna, but he's telling us how to remember Krishna. He's telling us how to please Krishna. By the Guru's grace, we can be constantly immersed in Krishna's thought. We shouldn't simply be engrossed in Guru's thought. That is Mayavad philosophy, that Guru is God. We should know that the Guru is the medium to Krishna. And by his mercy, we will always remember Krishna.
After all, Prabhupada never wrote any books about himself. After he left the planet, some of his disciples wrote books about him. But Prabhupada, he wrote Krishna book. He wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita. He wrote Srimad Bhagavatam. He wrote Nectar of Devotion. Everything Prabhupada did was simply to remind us of Krishna, to help us think of Krishna, not to remember him, but to remember Krishna. But he's teaching us how to remember Krishna through his mercy. That is essential. The spiritual master is the connecting point which connects our mind to Krishna. But the ultimate goal is to be connected.
What I mean to ask you is, we should not have that type of a thinking that how I can please the Krishna.
You don't know how to please Krishna. The reason why we need Guru is he teaches us how to please Krishna. Because our conditioned nature is what pleases us, we want to superimpose that upon Krishna. That if I like pizza, that means Krishna likes pizza. So I will offer it, right? And that can go to very, very high extremes of, I like to cheat people and make money, so therefore Krishna likes to cheat people and make money. He'll like it because I'm doing it for him. See, the cheat is the most prominent in Kali Yuga. So with these four defects, how do we know what Krishna wants? Even when we read the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, or even when the Christian reads the Bible, or the Mohammedan reads the Quran, we're reading, and everything that's coming into our heart is being filtered by our tendency to cheat, our illusion nature, our tendency to commit mistakes, and our imperfect senses. Everything is being filtered through these defects. But the Guru Maharaj, he tells us as it is. Not like that, like this. And then you, if you're submissive, you just surrender. Yes, this is best for me. Then you are directly getting the mercy of Krishna by following his instructions. Otherwise, we don't know what we're getting. Tad vijnana tam sugurum eva abhigacchet. You cannot understand the Shastra without Guru. You cannot understand Krishna without Guru. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu srayutamam. But not just having Guru, but pariprasnena sevaya, but inquiring submissively and rendering service. Rendering service means we inquire submissively, then what he says, we do it. We put aside all our own conceptions, which are all products of our four defective conditions. And to the degree we do this, to this degree, Krishna takes our service seriously. Any other questions? One more.
We come across people chanting.
Father of Madhava, Madhava Das Brahmachari.
Maharaj, you come across people chanting different mantras other than Maha Mantra. Now we have this conviction that this is the supreme process for this age. Now, there is a tendency to convince them or a demand like, you know, you should chant Maha Mantra. So That time we are accused of, we are forcing our ideas and we are very proud. Now we are also blamed. Now what type of pride is this if we are proud?
No, we should see if that person is actually following proper spiritual authority and living a good spiritual life, properly directed according to the Gita's teachings, and is chanting some other name of God. We should encourage that person. But at the same time, we should let them know how much love and enthusiasm we have for the Maha Mantra. But if the person really has no spiritual direction and isn't properly understanding the process of chanting the holy name and developing devotional service, then we should preach to that person to bring them to the higher platform of proper bhakti. The followers of Balabhacharya, for instance, they chant Sri Krishna Sharanamam. But it's an authorized disciplic succession. If they're actually following the principles, we shouldn't say this is better than that. We should encourage them. Very nice, you do. And the best way we can encourage them is by showing our enthusiasm and our dedication and our purity to chant the holy names according to Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya's philosophy. But if somebody's just a pseudo-mayavad with really no philosophical conclusions and no real genuine spiritual direction, and they're just sentimentally have just received some names because of some family traditions, or they heard them on the radio from some professional bhajan singer, and then if we want to help them, we should preach to them how to chant the holy names of the Lord properly. Mahaprabhu said there are many names of God. We chant the Maha Mantra ourselves because we are the strict followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and we want to follow exactly what he has done. But it's not, we can invite everyone to chant, but we shouldn't egoistically say, my name of God is better than yours. Because it's not your name of God, it's Krishna's name. Huh? And if he wants to reveal another name to someone, then that is for him to do. So we should be humble. By our humility and our devotion in chanting the holy name, people will be impressed. Not by our sectarian ideas. If someone inquires, then we can explain. This is Maha Mantra. According to the Shastra, this is the most important mantra in Kali Yuga. We can explain that. But if these are authorized names of God you are chanting, then you continue. Very nice. But if you would like to chant this Maha Mantra, that is very nice. Huh? We don't want to disturb a person's whatever faith he has. We want to increase it and encourage it. Huh? Any other questions? Yes?
Maharaj, sometimes we become so enthusiastic in the service that while chanting also we are thinking of service. So, what should we?
Better to think about service than sense gratification, no doubt. But when you do service, you should be thinking of service. And when you should be chanting, you should be thinking of chanting. We should understand that our service during the chanting of the holy name is to completely engross our mind in the sound of the name. That is our service at that time. During the chanting of japa or the chanting of kirtan, it is not our service to be thinking of other things. So by thinking of service while you're chanting, you're actually not doing your service properly. Your service at that time is to simply be immersed in Harinam. So if your mind drifts away thinking, I will do this and I will do that, just bring it back to the holy name. Don't let it wander. You have the rest of the day to think of service, but at this time, bring it back to the holy name. Adivo.